Okay, thanks for the introduction, Mike. I suppose what I wanted to go through today was a way of looking at performance measurement, I suppose, different to the historical way that investment management performance has traditionally been measured, which I sort of call sort of just purely on a market price-based measures, but try and get a bit behind the underlying fundamental dynamics of what the portfolio manager is trying to achieve by managing the portfolio and break it up in its components. Because for those of you who have read the paper, and I'll spend roughly about sort of 25 minutes, 30 minutes going through the key ideas in the paper. But depending on the actual components of the relative performance, so how much is actually driven by what I defined as the two elements of skill versus how much is defined by effectively just market volatility of share prices, can make quite a your assessment of that can make quite a big difference as to whether you believe what you should do with if you're looking to invest money or withdraw money from that portfolio manager. So I suppose what I wanted to try and get here was behind the key components of a skill, so people can make a much more better informed decision when they're looking at portfolio managers. And I suppose the reason why I sort of came to look at it this way is, as a portfolio manager, you have to start thinking about, well, what am I trying to do? What am I trying to achieve? And obviously, the ultimate goal we're all measured against as portfolio managers is the alpha against the market. And you realise, yes, that's what I'll be measured against. But I can't control the day-to-day fluctuations of the share prices. Some of those may relate to fundamental moves in those stocks, but some of them may not. So what I tried to get behind was really to try and get behind the drivers of the fundamental side and concentrate and really focus on that as a portfolio manager. And then I suppose, and then to look at, then you can assess in the other components of volatility is much more of a risk management type issue.
Notes down.
The obligatory disclaimer, although mine was shorter than some of the other people's today. In terms of the introduction, again, so fund management is generally premised on the belief of measurement of active funds management is that that securities can be mispriced as an active manager. I should just put this here. So in terms of basically the premise behind being an active manager is that the active manager can find securities which under or overvalued and obviously try to select those and invest in those. But when we come to measuring the performance of active fund managers, we pretty much quickly, strictly go to the market price. And that seems a bit of an incongruous arrangement to, one, believe that markets are inefficient in choosing your active fund manager, and secondly, to measure that active fund manager purely on the change in market value from one period to the next. I've got a few quotes from Warren Buffett, but I suppose it's not too surprising when it comes to investment markets. But As I sort of went through the researching of the project, there's sort of more and more of his sort of common sense equations actually come out effectively in the mass, which I sort of went through in terms of breaking up the active performance. But I thought this quote was pretty interesting from his letter to shareholders in 1997, which related to basically, if you're a net saver or a net investor in the marketplace over the next period of time, in this case 5 years, should you actually be wanting the market to go down or go up? And most people get this wrong and say, I'll prefer the market to go up. And sure, that is the case if you're looking to sell out of the market in the end of the period, in the 5 years' time or whatever. But if you're actually a net investor in the period, as long as the market hasn't gone down because of a deterioration in the fundamentals of the companies that you're investing in, you're actually better off. You can buy more of the earnings of those companies at a lower price if the market goes down. Which basically is that point summarised on the first point. So, obviously, if the fundamentals have deteriorated the company and the share price goes down, that's a negative, and, and that doesn't mean it's has become cheaper. But just looking at the share price movement on its own, unless you believe the market is fully efficient, will not tell you if the if that stock has become cheaper or not. Also, a quote from Benjamin Graham where he observed, in the short run, the market is a voting machine. In other words, it's basically a supply-demand, maybe a, you know, a behavioural and herd-type characteristics. But in the long run, it's a weighing machine. In other words, that the share prices eventually go back close to the intrinsic value or the underlying value of those companies over a medium-term horizon. And I suppose that final point is that the long-term share prices move towards the longer fundamentals is a bit of a fundamental tenet underlying the my analysis in this paper. In terms of market efficiency, which Mike mentioned, I suppose I wanted to avoid a lot of the potential debate if the market's efficient or not efficient, because we're not going to solve that question here. But I just wanted to include a couple of definitions of market efficiency, and I think the analysis in terms of breaking up the performance is of an active manager is sort of independent in a way of the market's efficient or not. Other than it's obviously going to be hard for an active manager to find intrinsic value and Graham's intrinsic value if the market is efficient. So I suppose the ability for the active fund manager to create value does require for the market to be inefficient. Just in terms of definition, this is a Farmer definition of efficient market, and which is basically that many intelligent participants are operating the market using information that is current and is likely to have impact on the future, and the actual price of a stock will be a good estimator of its intrinsic value. Efficient market doesn't require that each stock trades at its intrinsic value, but it does require that it's not able to be identified if it's slightly above or slightly below the intrinsic value. Again, the paper doesn't try and argue one way of or debate one way or the other degree of the efficiency of the market, other than that this tries to measure the success of active managers. And certainly the success of active managers will depend a lot on other participants in the marketplace. Obviously, the more intelligent number of participants in the marketplace acting, then the more difficult will become for active managers. And in the paper, I include some ways of looking at intrinsic value from a third-party point of view, including a lot of some quantitative analysis. And it is quite interesting in recent years, some of the quantitative factors, particularly this is for the Australian market, such as a lot of the value type based factors, have not performed strongly in the Australian market. Momentum type factors have continued to perform, but some of the value factors haven't, as in low PE or low price to book, and potentially that is because those factors have been picked up by people and are using those factors much more commonly in the marketplace, and that's actually taken away some of the ability of those factors to create value. So it will depend on other people in the market how efficient the marketplace is, and also it's worthwhile realising that active fund managers will have to also create sufficient value to overcome higher management fees, transaction costs, including any demanding of liquidity in the marketplace, and taxation is obviously a big issue as well. In terms of portfolio management, I suppose this is where I came to what I view as a portfolio manager, what you're really looking to achieve and what you're actually effectively managing. And effectively, there are two things. So firstly, when you get started, you've got the what portfolio you start with, so your initial investment, and thereafter, and obviously for that initial investment, you want to buy as cheap a portfolio versus its intrinsic value as possible. And then the second part would be your ability to grow the intrinsic value of of the portfolio through the purchases or sales, and also I suppose some of the investments may turn out to have more intrinsic value than you initially thought as well, is one way of growing that. And obviously, again, the corollary of that, not investing in companies which you think have intrinsic value but then are exposed to some risks which you didn't foresee, and that intrinsic value turns out not to be there after all. I didn't find a lot of references where the role of the portfolio manager was sort of defined in this way. Although I did find with Warren Buffett's long-term economic goal, which basically was to maximise Berkshire's average rate of gaining intrinsic value on a per-share basis, which basically comes down to what we'll discuss. In terms of intrinsic value, it's one of these ones which is somewhat in the eye of the beholder, and different people have different views as to what is intrinsic value. In terms of Berkshire Hathaway, they define it as basically simply the discounted value of the cash that can be taken out of a business during its remaining life. Warren Buffett does add that the intrinsic value calculation is not simple, and it relies obviously on a number of assumptions, and particularly it relies on how that company reinvests its cash flows going forward. So they focus heavily on intrinsic value as the basis for their investments. But in terms of later on when we have some discussion for questions, they say that they calculate it, but they don't disclose it externally. So maybe it's something that's worthwhile discussing as part of the Q&A. This is a bit of a view in terms of the calculation of intrinsic value a bit further. And the intrinsic value will occur over time, so it's only an estimate up front of the individual company, and it will be very heavily reliant on how well the cash flows for the company are reinvested by that company. So obviously a company with a high payout ratio, the reinvestment of the cash rates or the retained earnings is not as important, but certainly for any company which has a lower payout ratio, the resulting returns to investors will be very heavily dependent on how well that company basically manages that retained cash on your behalf. So this is where I come to try and break up the components of the traditional market-based alpha into the three components which are included in the paper. And just a bit of terminology. So P basically represents portfolio, M represents market. So in the following formula, you've got PM, which is the portfolio that the portfolio manager is managing, and M being the market price. So it's basically the portfolio at the market price at time T divided by that at time zero at the starting period, less the benchmark B, the market price for that at time T versus the starting benchmark. So that's the normal alpha that you face with, is basically how you've outperformed versus the market with your portfolio versus the benchmark over the period of time. And down the bottom, that's just put in log space. And it's put in log space just so it makes it much easier for the calculations where you don't have the cross-product terms. What I've done here is broken, and we'll go through the components in a sec, the investment performance into three parts, which I see you can look at investment portfolio performance. The first part being the relative growth in intrinsic value of your portfolio, the rate of that compared to the rate of growth in the overall benchmark or the market portfolio, which you can select from. And as we'll go through, this is depends on the time frame, but over a long period of time, this is really the key to skillful portfolio management. So portfolio managers who can grow their intrinsic value of their portfolio at a faster rate than that of the benchmark are those ones which will be able to deliver alpha over a medium-term period of time. The second component is the relative initial cheapness of the portfolio at inception, at time zero, so when you make the investment, versus how cheap other stocks are in the marketplace. And the third point, and we'll go through this in a bit more detail in a sec, is basically at the end of the investor's time horizon or the measurement period, how well or how closely your portfolios, the market prices of your portfolio have converged to what you believe intrinsic value is or the intrinsic value of those companies versus how the benchmark's market prices have converged to the intrinsic value of that. And this is a term where I mentioned before where you really don't have any control over, because I can't control the share prices day to day of the companies in my portfolio, and therefore, you know, it's in a way has an element of a sort of error term, which I've, in terms of the calculation. So the first two components is what I would classify as portfolio manager skill, and the third part is really just an error component. We go to that first component, which is basically PIV, and the IV in this component is intrinsic value. So your portfolio's intrinsic value at time T as a ratio of the portfolio's intrinsic value at inception. So that's, in other words, the rate of growth in portfolio's intrinsic value as a ratio to the rate of growth in the benchmark's intrinsic value. And by growing the portfolio's intrinsic value at a higher rate than the benchmark's intrinsic value, that you're creating value for the investor. And that's just the calculations in sort of a mathematical form. And the reason I've put it in that form is just so later on I can show you that the three components, when you add them together, will add up to the market-based based alpha. Probably the other component to know, of the three components, this is the only one which doesn't become smaller as N becomes larger. Unless, of course, your ability to add value becomes smaller. For example, maybe if your portfolio becomes such a large part of the market, then your ability to create value versus the benchmark might be diminished. So there might be some contraction in that over time. But effectively, there's no convergence to zero over long periods of time. The second component is how well you buy the initial portfolio for investment, and this will be the ratio of the portfolio's intrinsic value at time zero versus the portfolio's market value at time zero as a ratio to the benchmark's intrinsic value at time zero versus the benchmark at market value at time zero. And so this is basically how well you buy your portfolio in terms of its cheapness versus how cheap the market is at this stage. Obviously, the better you can do the initial purchase, the more value you can create over time, or more value you create really up front, and that will come out over time. The point, though, here is that all the items are obviously at time zero, so as you have longer-term measures of performance, this term will actually converge to you know, a much obviously a smaller amount. The third term is again, which I've sort of defined as it's not really an error term, but it has characteristics like an error term, so I've called it an error term, and which is basically at the end of the period, how has your portfolio market price converged to its intrinsic value compared to the benchmark's market price converged to intrinsic value. And the way to think about it, the more your portfolio has converged to intrinsic value relative to that to the benchmark, the more alpha you will get, because you're getting... But if, for example, your portfolio is a long way away from intrinsic value at the moment because of current market conditions or whatever may be the case, then that would be a negative contribute to your alpha. And later on when we have discussion, it's probably an interesting point as to for say if you're a manager and you're selecting fund managers, or if you're making allocations of withdrawals to fund managers, effectively this term could become an alpha term for the plan sponsor, as it's been termed in some of the offshore papers as I've seen it. But I think for the portfolio manager, I can't control individual share prices day to day, so I think therefore it's very much an error type term. And this is basically just the proof that the three components, which I've called alpha IEG, which is your growth in intrinsic value versus the benchmark, plus your alpha intrinsic at time zero, your initial alpha you create, plus this error term at the end of the period when you do the maths and multiply it out, it equals the market-based alpha. So the, over long periods of time, the key conclusion is that first term is really what drives portfolio management skill, because the other two terms will become small. And I suppose really should be the key focus for understanding for assessing portfolio managers. There's the component of skill in terms of the initial purchase of your portfolio, and then thirdly, there's that error term. Nice, but then you've got the question of how do you calculate these intrinsic values for the portfolio and the benchmark, where it's very easy at the moment. We've got the market prices you can use, but now we've added an extra component which you have to try and assess to be able to get the components of skill. Firstly, in terms of assessing them, they should include dividends. So effectively, they should be effectively on an accumulation basis. So if you invest in a stock and you get paid a dividend, then that should be included in the PIV or the BIV for the benchmark. And from a portfolio management view, probably should be sort of effectively time weighted, so adjusted for any cash flows in and out, which again complicates the calculations. So I think from a portfolio manager point of view, most should have some sort of either implicit or explicit view on the PIV or the BIV, as I've determined them. And from an external point of view, you may have to look at effectively sort of proxy measures of intrinsic value. And in the paper, I've gone through a range of different proxy measures, including sort of analyst valuations or broker target share prices or quantitative measures which could be used. This using the same assumptions between the portfolio's intrinsic value and the benchmark's intrinsic value is pretty important in terms of comparability between the two, and that effectively the implied levels of discount rates, etc., come into that calculation. What I tried to do then was just give if you've got the sort of the components of the skill and the volatility, or that sort of error term, have a go at looking from a market-based point of view what the profile of a skilled portfolio manager may be. This is probably reasonably basic maths on this sort of calculation. I've just used sort of a normal type distribution for the calculations. But I've done this one here is basically, so you've got a skilled portfolio manager, which I've defined as someone who can grow their intrinsic value of their portfolio at a rate of 4% per annum greater than that of the benchmark. The issue here is that obviously that the skilled portfolio manager won't be perfectly skilled, as I've termed in the paper, and that some years the skilled portfolio manager will do things better than other years. Sometimes they'll make mistakes. So even a skilled portfolio manager in some years may actually grow their intrinsic value at a rate less than that the benchmark grew. Now, I've tried to basically put this in terms of a chart looking at sort of obviously probability levels of in this case here it assumes a 4% expected return of PIV over BIV plus a 4% standard deviation around that, and that just gives you the chart, which basically shows you that if someone has a 4% per annum skill level, then that should be, you know, evidence of the 95%, you know, probability level after 3 years. Okay, that's the first term, and I haven't included that second term, which is how cheap we buy the portfolio. But then I tried to have a look at what would the profile be like, depending on movements in that error term, which is basically the ratio of PIV, which is your portfolio to the market, versus the benchmark to the market. So it's your relative cheapness of your portfolio versus the benchmark over any period. Now, you'll probably find that portfolio managers should always be managing their portfolio so that the intrinsic value of their portfolio is assessed to be cheaper than the benchmark, because that's what you'd expect to be doing. So I've chosen sort of a starting point ratio that your portfolio would be 15% cheaper than the index, which is that ratio of 1.15, and then a standard deviation of 0.085, which basically gives you a two standard deviation event, getting you down to one times. And that gives you basically a bit of a feel for, in this case, for a perfectly skilled manager. So in other words, someone without the 4% volatility, so you've got just 4% expected return, but how long it would take to identify someone just with regard to market moves. And in this case here, it's somewhere between 3 or 4 years, even for someone who never makes a mistake and always gets 4% extra return each year, it would take you 3 to 4 years to actually identify them at the 95% confidence level because of the volatility in markets. Now, there's a lot of assumptions as to how volatile the relative cheapness of your portfolio is versus the marketplace, and I don't really have any empirical evidence exactly what that may be, but I suppose I chose parameters which I thought was probably reasonable. And then basically what I tried to do was combine the two of those elements, which was that your portfolio manager who has skill won't be perfectly skilled, plus that the market itself will be quite volatile in share price. And I've basically approximated that by looking at a moderately perfectly skilled portfolio manager, someone who can outperform by 1.7% per annum, and then combine the volatility of the relative cheapness of the portfolios. And that's the chart there, which basically says that somewhere between year 7 and 8, you should be 95% confident of finding your skilled portfolio manager allowing for market moves. And I suppose the point of all that was it takes quite some time of market-based analysis to identify if a manager is skilled or not at the 95% confidence level. And in the paper, I've also had a look at a few other studies which come out with similar conclusions. And therefore, from measuring a portfolio manager, it does seem to make more sense to actually look more heavily at these other components of skill rather than just relying on market-based measures of performance, which the data shows it can actually take quite some time to identify a skilled manager or not. So I think I've done okay on time. I've got some discussion points. Obviously, very keen to hear people's comments on the paper or on the presentation. One issue probably worthwhile debate is obviously, can people really calculate these intrinsic values, the PIV or the BIV, and particularly from a third party's point of view? I can certainly see from a portfolio manager's point of view that's what you're meant to be doing. You should be able to calculate those, again, either explicitly or implicitly. You should be doing that to be able to manage the portfolio. But from a external party point of view, obviously it becomes more difficult, and therefore the reliance on the market is the assessment for that. But in terms of that, the ability for clients to better understand skill levels is obviously a big benefit if it was able to be done. One risk may be competitive information. People might not be willing to evolve their assessment of values, at least at an individual type security level. They may be more willing at a broader point level. Does it lead to a change in investment behaviour? And may it lead to sort of overestimation by portfolio managers of their intrinsic value to try and justify bad decisions, which obviously wouldn't be a good thing to happen. And then, as I mentioned earlier, as I was sort of nearly finalising the paper, I think it was the Journal of Financial Analysts came out with a paper talking about looking at sponsor skill, as they call it, which was basically the skill of manager or managers to select managers, and just suppose the question of how some of these calculations and terms could be applied for that behalf, and in particular that sort of that final error term, as I've defined it, does that effectively become an alpha term for the timing for sponsors when they're allocating funds to or from portfolio managers. So that's it.
Right. Thanks, Martin. Certainly it was an interesting presentation. Clearly there are some messages there and some questions. We've got a roving mic, which I'll just test. It's got a green light on now. Yes, it works. So who's going to ask the first question? We'll get into the first argument. Yes.
Hi, Martin. It's Zach Roberts from Deutsche Bank. I suppose I have what may be a cynical comment and then an actual question is that if I understand rightly from your analysis of how long it takes to identify a skill manager being sort of 8 years plus, if I have sort of a 25, 30 year investment horizon, given that on average most managers will underperform the market, am I just better off being in an index?
Well, I suppose what I was trying to say is if you rely on traditional measures of portfolio management, then you may be misguided by your decisions if that manager is skilled or not skilled within that 8-year period. But I want to sort of say if you actually got behind what was underlying the portfolios, then you may well identify it much quicker. So I haven't sort of defined, because I don't know how quickly you might be able to define it, but you might actually define it in a much accelerated way over the 8-year period. So that was more that point, rather than it takes 8 years to find a skilled portfolio manager. And so we'll say it might take a long time to find a skilled portfolio manager if you just rely on market prices to do that.
Okay, and then the other question I had is, when you're comparing these back to benchmarks, are you always comparing all the equity managers to the total equity benchmark? Or, for example, if a manager has a small cap bias, do you compare them to a benchmark with a small cap bias?
Well, I think in this case, I have left it open, so it's not really just equities. It could be any asset class or anything in terms of, that's not purely based equities. Obviously, I come from equities background, so it's sort of biased there in the commentary. So it would really be how you define the benchmark for that appropriate asset class or assessment. So I would have thought it would be within the opportunity set of what that investor would be looking at. So in the case of small caps, it would be versus a small cap benchmark.
If I could perhaps comment there, some consultants measure managers against style benchmarks. They actually put a manager in a style box and then tailor the style benchmark. So I guess that would make sense in this approach. If the manager does have a distinct style and sticks to it, otherwise part of the style may be eclectic and it may be the ability to move between styles.
I had a look. So I sort of originally, when I wrote the summary of the paper, I sort of had to come up with some ideas. But one thing which I thought that might become evident is that sort of the really deep value managers might actually take quite some time to come through, because they might invest in stocks which are just totally out of favour, and the general market never catches on, or it takes a long time to catch on to that those stocks being intrinsically undervalued. So therefore, I think different styles may actually take longer. And that actually came through the Beckers paper, which I included in the paper, which looked at different volatility. And the sort of the hedge fund type investors, which are making lots of smaller bets, you know, long and short, they came through basically, or identified if they were skillful in a very short period, because they were making more bets basically, while the aggressive or highly aggressive investor with the high volatility long only, you know, they had quite a few cases, I think even after 20 years, that they, even though they had skill, that skill hadn't been identified yet through the market because of basically bad luck affecting those. So it depends very much on your style, how quickly that skill comes through, you know, to the end investor as well.
Martin Trevor Thompson, you've partly answered the question I was going to just ask, but can I take you back to your answer to Zach's question? I'm still rather confused by this, unless I've missed the point, because the graphs that you were putting up were showing a crossover point, depending on which one you showed, anywhere between sort of 5 and 8 years. Now, as a user of those services, you can have a view behind the scenes as to you know, whether somebody's going for intrinsic value or whatever their investment style is, but those graphs seem to me to be a reflection of, irrespective of what the style is, what the underlying performance is going to be, which means that you know, you might ponder on the attributes of different investment managers, but at the end of the day, you're going to wait 7 or 8 years before you arrive at one of those theoretical crossover points. And a lot can change, and I'm struggling to see how, you know, this whole process actually helps you select a manager, because of what I just said, I guess. Like, it's such a long bet, and you can't be confident that you, whatever attributes you ascribe to a particular manager or type of manager, will actually deliver that overlap of a long, long way down the track.
Yes, I sort of see what you're saying. And like, I suppose the interesting thing, I've actually used a 4%, which is what we target as a 4% alpha, but it's a relatively high alpha to come through. So it actually sort of shows you that's sort of the volatility you get from any, you know, from any sort of active portfolio management. The numbers are before fees as well, so there's those considerations. But I don't think we should concentrate too much just on that 5%. So they're the bottom five. You've got, you know, the mid, if you actually find, if you've got that 4% alpha, you're well ahead of the market, and if you happen to get the 95% guy, you know, you own half of Australia. So like, I wouldn't concentrate too much on that five. I really put those charts in really just to show that market-based calculations of performance, if you're measuring your portfolio manager only on that, you may not identify if they're skilled or not in a short period of time, and you really should concentrate on other things. So I don't want to get too sort of sidetracked on that, because it's actually, I'm sort of saying go away from that to something else rather than then get focused on that.
Yeah, I don't think you have to wait for the 7 or 8 years. I think you're going to be gradually gaining confidence on the way through. But what the chart really says is that after 6 or 7 years, the numbers might be saying the manager is unskilled when he really is. He really has got skill, but it hasn't been shown yet. Or otherwise, it might be saying the manager's got skill and really hasn't.
That's very helpful.
The numbers gradually become, the confidence intervals gradually become more powerful.
But how do you get more confidence on the light of what you just said? In other words, the numbers are not necessarily showing which...
Well, what I'm saying is the more confidence comes from better understanding how the portfolio manager's increasing the intrinsic value of his portfolio, his or her portfolio, each year versus that of the benchmark. So that needs to be the focus.
That's how you
get more confidence, either skill or not skill.
Tim Jenkins, Martin. Martin, I really enjoyed the presentation. Thank you very much. There's just two things that confuse me about the application of the approach in practice. The first is, I don't see how anyone could come up with an intrinsic value of the benchmark. There's so many stocks, say, in the ASX 200, there's no analyst who has sufficient knowledge of those companies to be able to arrive at an intrinsic value by themselves. There'd have to be a network of such people working together to arrive at an intrinsic value. That's the first practical issue I'd like to ask about. The second is that seems to me that, again, the intrinsic value is not objectively observable, so it's calculated by an individual. It seems to me that human nature being what it is, the intrinsic value of a portfolio manager is going to be subject to bias once it's been struck. And how do you get rid of that bias out of the assessment process?
Yeah, no, very, very good questions. And I suppose these are things I've been trying to think of for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years as I manage the money as well, on thinking about those sort of things. And I suppose, well, I can turn it just to the last one in terms of the bias, because you're right, your assessment of intrinsic value is nearly by definition going to be more positive than probably the real intrinsic value, because you favour things or that you like or whatever, but it's not, and be biased some way or the other into those stocks. So probably nearly by definition, your portfolio, you'll assess it having maybe more intrinsic value than what it really may have. But I suppose what I try and think about that bias from period to period is that if you're overestimating the intrinsic value now, it will be harder for you to grow that in the future. So if you think of yourself in a sort of a long-term sense, then there's no encouragement to sort of bias yourself to overestimate the intrinsic value now, because that will just make it a harder hurdle to get over in future periods for growing it. So, but it's a point. In terms of the intrinsic value not being objectively observable and calculation of the benchmark, that's why I suppose I struggled on it. With these issues myself, and try to come up with proxies for calculating them. I think sort of over time, companies' share prices basically follow the earnings per share of companies over longer periods of time. And I think particularly when you put together in a portfolio, that's probably even more the case than on individual companies. So for my assessments, because again, we don't cover all the stocks in the benchmark ourselves, I tend to look at sort of proxy measures, and the main proxy measure that I use myself is looking at the calculating the EPS of the index, which I've done in the paper, of the accumulation index, and then multiplying that by a constant multiple to get an assessment of the benchmark's intrinsic value. But that's a very sort of basic assessment, and you can do a similar one for the portfolio as well. From an outside, you can calculate the earnings per share of that portfolio and put the same multiple on it. And that won't be perfect, because if I said in the paper, if the portfolio manager's changing his portfolio or his or her portfolio to a higher growth type mix, they might be reducing the short-term earnings for higher long-term growth, which may be actually increasing the intrinsic value of the portfolio, but will be reducing the short-term earnings per share of the portfolio, which you wouldn't pick up in that type of scenario. But they're my only sort of... And the other one, I suppose, is I put in the paper, which I was a bit worried about. You could basically say the benchmark intrinsic value, the share price is not a bad estimate of that. But then the risk of saying that is obviously you could say the portfolio's intrinsic value, the benchmark's not a bad estimate, the market price is not a bad estimate of that, and then you get back to the market prices. But you do have a problem. But I think and that's why I spent a bit of time trying to come up with proxy measures of intrinsic value from an outside perspective. But I suppose my favourite would just be looking at as far out earnings per share forecasts you can get and put in some sort of multiple on those, and maybe changing that for discount rates and changes in economic cycles. You could probably put in there if you wanted to add something to that, but you'd probably have to have the same assumptions on your portfolio's intrinsic value.
If I could use another example, when I was a young lad, used to manage a portfolio of listed property securities. I effectively use as intrinsic value my opinion of the underlying NTA of the property portfolio. And so effectively, I was using Martin's technique, because the share prices of individual property trusts were either above or below the NTA. And I was saying that reflected mispricing.
Yeah, it comes down to somebody...
In a micro portfolio, that was fairly easy to adopt. You could run through the LPT index and put a price on each one pretty quickly. It was easy. So, anyway, Can you move the mic a couple of places forward, Naomi?
Naomi Edwards. Thanks very much for a good paper, Martin. The company that I'm with has been looking hard at performance attribution systems because we're in a very tiny segment of the market, so we're kind of separate from a lot of traditional benchmarks because we're constrained to invest only in about 10% of the stock market. So your idea about having a simple measure of intrinsic value within our constrained universe and then comparing that to our funds manager's actual movement in his assessed intrinsic value could be quite a useful thing to take back to the investment committee. So thanks very much for that idea. And I was also thinking, because we're in the ethical space, that's kind of a space where I suppose our philosophy is that there actually is more intrinsic unrecognised value in that space that the market price is possibly underestimating. But of course that may just be overestimate of value by an ethical funds manager of the kind of untapped value that's lying in that. But it was a very useful paper. Thanks.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Martin. Facetious question. When we come in and talk to you next, so you guys are going to open up your list of intrinsic values, and we'll see how that tracks and analyse it. I think that's absolutely fantastic, and really do appreciate that. But I mean, while that is a facetious question, I think it would be a very interesting thing for fund sponsors or managers to do, is to have those sorts of conversations with managers about intrinsic value rather than market value.
Yeah.
Forgetting the attribution, because I think the benchmark and that sort of thing can be often be quite lead to silly conversations.
Yeah.
But seeing how your intrinsic value has changed stock by stock and why, and having discussions around that, I suspect could lead to much better insights, both of your clients and perhaps even as a partnership between client and manager.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And it's a point maybe I should have made for the other question, is that in a way, it's good to do all that assessment of the benchmark's intrinsic value, but it doesn't matter that much. I think if you focus just on what you're doing in terms of increasing the intrinsic value of your portfolio, and I think the focus on that, which comes to some work that was done on some of those fundamental indices, which goes to basically if you're creating your portfolio around a sound fundamental system, then maybe that in its own will give you, some alpha from that without even worrying too much about the benchmark intrinsic value. So, yeah, so certainly I think that's a key issue for fund managers to understand, as to how much value they've created period to period on just their PIV without really worrying too much about the BIV. The BIV was just more to make the maths look nice. So.
And your paper will certainly end up in the hands of Paul than mine.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Who else have we got? Have we got any asset consultants here who are actually doing all this performance measurement?
Hi, Peter Cossey-Boom from Ericsson's across in New Zealand. One of the things which you made a comment on earlier, which I'll just you may want to talk about, the idea of buying a portfolio cheap, and you also discussed how much it converged. And I know that talking to some managers talk about buying cheap, and other managers make the point that buying cheap is not necessarily the only way to add value. You only buy cheap if it's going to converge and the speed of convergence. So the breakdown I see you've given has actually given a few more ideas as to ways people add value. You can either add value by buying cheap and waiting, or you can buy something that's going to converge faster, but it might not be as cheap.
Yeah, well, I suppose this was at the start. My sort of a bit of the underlying premise was that eventually the share price gets to the intrinsic value. So, and that the timing of the convergence is probably like like I haven't really had a, I've had a go at that sort of standard deviation of it, but it's a very difficult thing, and it will depend on market cycles, and it depends on your style of investment as well, and basically how quickly your ideas will check on to the rest of the marketplace. So like you might find someone who's really able to buy things cheap, but might take some time, which is that deep value manager. The only thing I'll point out is when you do the maths, that term actually diminishes over time. And the first term, which is your ability to increase intrinsic value, becomes the dominant term. But I did do a few simulations in that, and it actually does take 25 or 30 years for the buying things cheap to diminish to a very small amount. So it still actually does count even over a 10-year period of time.
Yeah, I think the ones who say that fast convergence, their idea is not to hold it for the 25 years. It's to hold it for the 2 years to converge and then do the same process again.
Yeah, so, well, I suppose I'd how quickly can things converge is a difficult one, because it's converging reality versus the marketplace as well, so I don't have a big feel on that. But what I'm saying is that's a really bit of a luck term, and therefore I wouldn't, as a portfolio manager, I wouldn't be putting my approach on that, because it may go further away rather than converging. If you focus on the other two components, that's really the skill component, as far as I see it.
Yeah, and the only other one, which is quite different from the paper, is whether any managers have skill in actually, even if they don't outperform and get alpha, is to actually have a correlation benefit. But that's outside the scope of your paper.
Yeah. No, good point. Okay, anything else?
Okay, it's nearly time for afternoon tea. Is there one more question? No, everyone held their peace. Thank you. Well, thanks for some good questions.
Thank you.
Some good debate. Please thank Martin.